WEAF, New York.
O'clock, and here is Mary Margaret McBride
presenting Carol Landis in An American Girl, Her Own Story. How would that be, Carol?
Well, it sounds very nice, Mary.
After all, you are an American girl who has sort of made her own way in the world. How old were you when you started singing?
Oh, well, I really started singing as a child, but professionally.
Seven, I remember.
That's right.
Remember, I know everything about you.
You do?
We're going to do
wonderful.
One of those interviews where not a word of a press agent gets in.
Oh, good.
Figure the whole thing the way it really happened.
Hmm? All right, fine.
Now, mind you, I don't mean to knock press agents. I think they're a wonderful race of people,
don't you? Yes.
But they do occasionally
send them up a few stories.
Once when I was in Hollywood, I had to get the life stories of a lot of Hollywoodians. This is before you were born, practically, but it's when I was writing for a living. And I found great difficulty in getting the life stories of Hollywoodians because they'd had their life stories written so many times and in so many different ways that they had to stop and think. I'd say, where were you born? They didn't know. Do you remember where you were born?
That sounds Wisconsin.
She was born with. But you went to California almost immediately.
Well, when I was about 8 months old, we moved to San Diego, California. My father was in the Navy, and so we moved there.
Well, that's difficult because I thought it was San Bernardino.
Well, that came later.
Oh, later.
San Bernardino was the next move, and mm-hmm. I went to school there. Mm-hmm. And then I took myself to San Francisco to begin my professional career.
Well, is that where, at the age of 7, you sang to the humiliation of your 15-year-old brother?
No, that was in San Bernardino. An amateur night in the theater. And it was very humiliating. I had no idea what she was supposed to do on a stage, but I thought I belonged on a stage. So my brother took me to this theater, and I promptly walked backstage and told him I wanted to sing. The man said, fine, where's your piano copy and where's the music? And I said, what music? So I walked out cold without anything and began singing. And only my brother applauded, I must say. When he got me home, he thanked me thoroughly. He told me never to do it again. Maybe he should have been with me this time.
For
For the new show.
Oh, she's in a new show at the Broadhurst Theater. Have I said that? A lady says yes.
Mm.
And she's a most decorative looking person. I was there the first night and saw you. And some of those gowns, it must be fun to wear, isn't it?
Oh, yes, it's heaven. Yes, they really are beautiful.
Aren't they?
Uh-huh.
And of course, with your blonde hair, these white and silvery looking gowns, they look like they cost $5 million.
Well, not quite. Heaven help us.
Heaven help you.
No, Catherine Toombs designed them for me and made them, and I must say she is most magnificent at dressing a woman.
Tell about one or two of them.
Well, several of them, as you remember, brought spontaneous applause when I came on stage. I think one of the most beautiful is a white crepe with silver and light blue beading that runs all through the dress and is appliqued on. And it's in the 16th century Venetian style. And, it has a very odd draped sleeve that seems to be quite fascinating to the audience. And last evening when I came on stage, they applauded again. They just really gasped at that one.
There are two little red flowers up in the blonde hair.
Red, uh-huh.
And there's a blue thing right around, close thing around your neck.
Yes.
To match the stuff in the gown.
Yes, a necklace made mm-hmm. that's tied around the neck. Mm-hmm.
And you are really a dream in it.
Oh, thank you.
You could just hear the females gasping and the males sort of gulping. And she's really awful pretty close up. I wondered about that. You always wonder about that. But I was far enough back so I couldn't be sure. You know, makeup will do a lot, won't it?
Oh, yeah.
Stage lights and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everybody knows, I suppose, about Carol Landis, that she's one of the favorite entertainers of men overseas. She had that first trip, you remember, the four Jills in a Jeep? Some of you saw the picture that was made after. Some of you, I know, read the book that was published by Random House.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if some of that stuff is too old to talk about, because I was rereading the book last night and laughing my head off.
Honestly?
Laughing?
Well, I love talking about it because it's something very close to my heart and I love remembering it.
Remember the command performance?
Oh, my heavens, yes.
The command?
Terrifying, yes. Do you want me to tell about
that?
Well, we suddenly were notified that we were to give a command performance between Their Majesties in Windsor. And we knew nothing of court etiquette, and so the dinner guest guard began teaching us how to bob before their majesties and what to say and not to speak unless you were spoken to, and all of it, you know, and it was quite terrifying. And first we were to do the show that we had been doing for the servicemen, and then be presented afterwards. So when we arrived at Windsor, we began dressing in a great jitter and went on stage for the show and the national anthem and God Save the King. And then Mitzi began to put on her little dancing costume, Mitzi Mayfair. And suddenly, much to her chagrin, she found that she had left her little dancing instructs at home and had nothing to wear underneath. It was a very bad situation when you dance and twirl and kick your legs all over the place. But by the, well, fortunately, Martha Ray had a little pair of tights that she wore under her dress, so we made a quick switch and Mitzi put them on and got through it all right.
And I remember Kay Francis had a sore throat.
Oh, yes.
You had a sore throat.
Uh-huh.
And Mitzi was feeling simply terrible.
She had just come out of the hospital just that morning and was so weak she could hardly stand up. I mean, you know, bad enough. But then after the show we were presented and the king didn't arrive. He had some business for last minute he had to attend to. But we were presented to the queen and... she was most gracious and most charming.
Remember what she said, that she saw Shane?
Yes, about the national anthem. You know, I got a telephone call on that from the representative just a short time ago. And they said, is it really true that the Queen didn't know our national anthem or the American national anthem? And I said, well, she told me it was, and she was quite ashamed of herself and said she was going to learn it that night. And he said, do you suppose she did? And I said, I'm certain she did.
I think so, too.
She would.
She'd learn every word of it.
And it was so sweet of her to be frank, you know.
And I may say, she'd know a good deal more of it than most Americans.
I wanted to tell her that, but I didn't.
Yes, because most of them know about the first verse, or the chorus. What do you think?
I think
about the last
verse.
Yeah. Yeah. And then tell what the little Princess Margaret Rose said to
Mitzi. Mm. Oh, she wanted to learn to sit a bug dance. And would Mitzi please teach her? And if we had had time, I'm sure it would have been arranged that Mitzi fell madly in love with her naturally, you know.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was a typical story. There was something wrong with every one of you on a time when you'd want to be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
A command performance, and everybody was sore throat and lost pants.
Oh, yes, also.
What not?
To help the show, the microphone went off, you know, so we had no mic for these. Well, they were what I think about... probably 10,000 Guinea Bay Guard, something, you know, present. And no microphone. To try to project you to that many people in a hall is almost impossible.
Mm.
Now with my stage technique, I probably could.
Oh,
I have learned to throw the voice like, quite well, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Did you hear me the other evening?
Sure, I could hear you perfectly. Well, you do have to change your technique.
Oh, yes, it's very different. Very different. It's much more volume, and you can't strain because you'll wind up with laryngitis. So you must just.
I thought that thing you said to Janice the other day. If you lift an eyebrow on a movie set, everybody sees it. But you can lift both eyebrows
on the stage.
On the stage,
it doesn't make much of a mark.
First row may notice it, but
that's right. Oh, it's very different acting on the stage in comparison to the motion picture. Because here on the stage, I mean, if you, as I say, one slight gesture doesn't carry at all. And on the screen, when you figure that a close-up is, about 12 feet at least on the screen, I mean, just the head alone, and if you do that, well, it's magnified so much. And on the stage.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting. It's quite an experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it is. And you, of course, are the kind of girl that I think is always apt for experiences. I really meant it when I said your story is the story of a real American girl. You evidently made up your mind what you wanted, and then you went out. You know the story, Vincent, of how she had $16 and maybe 75 cents or 94 cents or some amount like that, and a bus ticket. And besides that, Hollywood is too full of girls who have won beauty contests. Well, did you win a beauty contest?
No. No, I got third place once, and then I was so ashamed, I went to a drawing, you know, where you get a ticket as you walk into the theater, and my sister's number was called, so I took the ticket away from here, I went up on stage, and I won an electric heating pad. That To save face, I told my mother that I once first first place in the beauty contest.
And I did I think she's an honest young woman.
Completely.
Yeah. But press agents always say that you win beauty contests, don't they? Because they expect to see somehow.
Well, I don't know. They've never said it about me.
Well, I thought I'd read that she had one. Well, maybe get some light.
No,
I put that in.
But I didn't get this lady.
All right, here you are with the $16 plus.
Oh, to San Francisco, yes. Well, I didn't quite know what to do. This time I did prepare myself. I got a song sheet so I'd have some music to sing to, so I wouldn't repeat myself. And I looked in the newspapers and saw all the various clubs that were listed in San Francisco that had entertainers. And so I proceeded to go to the clubs for an interview, for an audition. And the first one I went to, which is the Royal Hawaiian, they did need a girl singer, and they also needed a girl dancer. So they decided I should do both. And they asked if I could dance, and I told them I could. And so I was hired, and I sang with the band, and then I had to do the hula, which I never attempted in my life, but I learned. And the manager thought that this other girl who taught me and myself was so good on the floor, he made a team of us. And the two of us did a hula. And then I went from there to the Rio Del Mar Country Club in Santa Cruz, California. It's a neat, wonderful place. And I sang there for a year and saved up a little more money and took myself to Hollywood. Still carrying on.
Well, what was your first chance in Hollywood?
Well, you see, it was in the days before the Screen Actors Guild was formed, and it was wide open. Anyone who could get a job could work. And these days, it's very difficult, you know. They had to close shop. I say this because so many people hear the story. They all want to rush right to Hollywood, you know, and just walk in the door and say, I'm here. And, of course, it isn't that simple now. But I went to this open interview at Warner Brothers Studio, and there were some 300 girls. And the dance director and the assistant dance director all stood in the center, all of us, and they looked us over quite carefully, and they said, you over there, and they'd go by a group. And when they looked at me and pointed to me and said, you over there, I didn't know whether they meant out or in. So I trembled and shook for about another 20 minutes, and then I learned that I had been selected as one of the 12 that they needed. And so I thought that I would go out and learn a quick tap dance step or something to fake my way, because I didn't know a thing about tap dancing, and that's what we were wanted for. And so I was very elated about getting the job and being in a picture in Hollywood and all that. And much to my amazement, the dance director dismissed the girls who weren't selected and then turned to us and said, oh, it will begin rehearsal immediately. So my heart sank. I thought, oh, my heavens, as soon as I've been picked, I'm going to get thrown right out. And I got in the last row. They formed three lines, so I stood in the third line, and the director danced the step and said, all right, girls, do that. They all did, and I stumbled around in the back and bumped people, and the director looked at me and said, let's do that again. And I still was fumbling all over. My feet were slipping around, and he finally turned to me and said, you don't know how to dance, do you? And I said, no, I don't, but I'm sure I can learn. Please, please. So he let me stay, and I learned.
I think he liked you because you were determined.
Yes, I'm sure he did. Because there have been a lot of girls who have been dancers in Hollywood, and they've sort of done as little as they can get by with, you know, without bothering to sort of develop at all. They're content with just sort of easing by. Mm-hmm. And so he was impressed that I worked hard and learned things.
Mm-hmm. And one of the first pictures you played in was
Varsity Show.
Was that with Pat O'Brien?
Oh, no. I forget the name of the picture I played in with Pat O'Brien. I had one line. And Kay Francis, too. Pat O'Brien and Kay were the stars of it. And I had one line. I forget the name of it, though. But Pat was wonderful. And when he formed his own company, he borrowed me for 20th Century for his picture, which I was very thrilled about.
He taught you a lot about acting, didn't he?
Well, just knowing Pat and observing him is a great lesson.